You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
Welcome to a very special edition of The Dan Nichols Show, brought to you by Fothergill Island and Bomb Squad Beer, as we welcome our very first return guest on the show, because Stephen Kitsoff, the last time we spoke, you were still injured, hopefully coming back. South African rugby fans were sitting waiting for the good news, and instead we now found you as a retired rugby player sitting in one of the most beautiful places on earth, surrounded by cold beer and 11 kilograms of biltong, and not looking too unhappy with life, it has to be said.
No, first of all, it's a huge honour to be your first return guest. So, but yeah, absolutely amazing. I mean, enjoying cold beer on the river, looking at beautiful scenery. So, yeah, very blessed to be here. And thanks to you, Dan. Thanks for inviting me and bringing me all the way to such a magnificent place.
Well, let's have a little chat about where we are. It is Fothergill Island on Lake Kariba. I grew up in Zimbabwe, so it's a part of the world I know well. This is your first ever visit to Zimbabwe, and it has given you the opportunity to discover just why those who know about Zimbabwe, know about Lake Kariba in particular, know that it really is one of the most extraordinary places on earth.
Yeah, you're spot on. Lake Kariba has been mind-blowingly beautiful, and it's awesome to have my missus here as well with us. So I've just checked, like, she probably took 10,000 photos yesterday of the sunset and of the gorge and of the animals this morning, but yeah, it's absolutely special. And as you said, first time in Zimbabwe.
I suspect it won't be the last.
And you're 100% right. I'll definitely come and visit more often, I think, especially using your guidance and when it comes to traveling and seeing places and seeing the true beauty of what Africa can offer you. I'll definitely be up here more often.
We had a long conversation this morning when we went out on our game drive about the travel that we've done, and the conversation drifted in a direction that is not unusual when I speak to recently retired sports people or current sports people, because from the outside it seems like you've seen the world, but quite often seeing the world means a hotel, a training ground, a sports field, and the inside of a rather dodgy nightclub until 4 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and then stumble off to get a plane to the next destination. How nice has it been, as sad as it was to retire a little earlier than perhaps planned, to now have this freedom to be able to travel on your own terms and see the world beyond just the parameter of rugby?
Yeah, it's, I mean, jumping on a jet and going on a rugby tour or traveling the world is one thing. As you said, you get stuck in a hotel room, you get stuck in a routine. You maybe have 1 or 2 days to explore a bit, but I mean, since retirement, and it is quite a sad thing for me not to be involved with the team anymore. But as you said, it gives me the freedom to come to places like this, explore, see the scenery, actually be here without any guilt of focusing on a Monday morning fitness session, which is absolutely amazing. But
it's strange that, because props normally love Monday morning fitness sessions, your favorite things.
Or the weigh-in. The Monday morning weigh-in. But no, it is special, and I mean, I've had a couple of opportunities throughout the year now since I've been retired to actually see and travel without any worries on what the scale's going to say on a Monday morning.
It's the counterpoint to news that I suspect you probably in the back of your head had a quiet voice from a while before saying this might be what happens, but the neck injury was severe. You can't really anchor the front of a scrum, especially when you are arguably the strongest human being on earth, without a neck that works properly. But still, when you have to front up to the world, accept the fact that it's over and say goodbye officially, how difficult, how emotional was that?
It was. For me, the biggest thing was when I found out about the injury and I sat in the specialist's office, it went from having that certain mentality of being an athlete and trying to perform with your body and your mind, and you're actually playing the game of rugby, from that into trying to build a career outside of it. I was very fortunate that myself and Malcolm with this beer brand started something special, had a couple of ventures outside, which I just went from rugby player into trying to be a businessman. And it happened much quicker than I wanted to happen. I was very excited to play another couple of years, slowly transition from the one thing to the other. But it was like overnight a switch in my mind, which actually made the transition period a bit easier. But every time I do see the guys play, or I meet with them, or go watch a Stormers or Springbok game, singing the anthem, watching the guys play, knowing I can't do anything about it, that's quite an emotional piece of the fact that I can't be involved in the sport anymore.
I think for most of us, it would be, oh, well, the 80 minutes, that's the one that you would miss.
Yeah.
But from the age of 18, when you first wandered into a Stormers training session in your school uniform and bench pressed more than anybody in the history of rugby ever, this has been your life. This has been the professional world of Stephen Kitsoff. And so that 80 minutes is such a tiny part of it. It's that routine of coffee with the mates, going to gym together, having those training sessions, the roommates, the travelling together. It does become your whole world in so many ways. And all of a sudden, that's gone.
It's gone, yeah. And as you said, it's that Sunday travels, Monday massages, the meetings, the tough sessions in the week, the preseason. All those things become part of your life, as you said. And it's being that full athlete mode, because it's all you're thinking about is your diet, the way you train, the way you want to perform, getting in a great mental state. So you plan your week out, because 80 minutes is important, but the rest is actually what your life entails most of the time. So it is a complete change of who I was, and I had to reinvent myself. I had to try and find new things that get me excited in the morning. And luckily, as I said earlier, is the these things create a bit of excitement in my life, because it's launching new products, it's trying to be an entrepreneur, it's trying to come up with exciting ways where I can take my rugby history and try and implement it into a future where I can still earn a decent salary and I can carry on and build a legacy outside of the game of rugby. And that's something that's always been important to me. It's like, I don't want to be known as just Stephen Kitsoff, the Springbok rugby player. I wanted to be known as a bit more, as a guy who's actually tried to create something and hopefully not fail, but try and make success outside of the game, which is superly important to me.
And I'm sure you'll do that, not least of all because your wife is a titanic figure of industry and drive, and will make sure that all that happens. But I have to sometimes remind myself, if it were just your rugby legacy, this is a rugby legacy of somebody who's won two consecutive Rugby World Cups. I have to remind myself sometimes my mate Kitsy is actually one of the great front rowers in history, and not just somebody I go out, have a few beers with, and then have to apologize to my wife for 3 days. You have this incredible legacy. Have you had time now to sit back, to reflect on it, and go, you know what, I did something pretty damn special?
Yeah, no, I've reflected a lot, and opportunities to, and they've been coming up a lot, is just opportunities to talk about my career in front of a group of people or just mates, and actually telling these stories that I've experienced in rugby. If it's not just the good rugby stories where we had historic wins as the Springboks, but also the moments off camera, the times when we actually in the bar, or the funny things that happen outside of the game. And just reflecting on all of that, because it's all part of the ecosystem of what rugby was or is. And for me, it's special, because that part of my life become, as you said, that 18, 19-year-old kid walking to the Stormers, super, super shy, only have 50 words a week, and I don't speak to anyone. I just focus on my job, and that's the only thing I want to do, to becoming a leader of a team, having the guts to start a venture outside of the game, and then slowly building confidence, and eventually to a point where I'd feel comfortable talking on a podcast or talking in front of a group of people, has taken a 14, 15-year time span to get there. And that's what I am most grateful for, but also reflect back on, because I think, yes, if I had to stay that shy kid today, I don't know what I would have been doing today if when I retired, or if I retired. But the progression I've made as not just a rugby player, but as a human, is quite a special thing, because it's given me the confidence to go out and try stuff and talk in front of people and mingle and network. And that's just what I'm so grateful for, and reflect on and say, listen, I'm so thankful for my rugby career. And the neck, it was just collateral at the end of the day.
Look, I think you were 25 when anybody in the media first heard you speak. Nobody thought you actually had that capacity until that stage.
Just another mute rugby player.
But one hell of a good one. Before I ask you about some of those rugby memories, it is the off-the-field stuff that defines so much of what you take away from the game. And the 80 minutes we see is that very small fraction, the important one, certainly.
Yeah.
But some of those adventures you've had, I know many of them cannot be repeated for fear of having several rugby players imprisoned. Malcolm Marks, how are you? But give us one or two of those stories when you think back, the ones you go, oh my God, that was just so much fun. I can't believe we did that. That's something that I'll take with me for the rest of my days.
Yeah, I think probably the ones that stand out the most is like it's post-World Cup memories, because it's copious amounts of beer and brandy and guys just not trying to go to bed. And the one that stands out the most for me is the RG one, but probably another one I can tell you is the 2023 World Cup. So after the game, the boys all got together in the hotel lobby, and it was a massive party, and things went on until like 5 o'clock in the morning. So some of the guys, and especially the wives and the kids and the girlfriends who were there, decided to go to bed. And the players, like 80% of us, just decided, listen, yeah, it's not worth going to bed. We have to be up in 3 hours, and then we have to go to the rugby awards. So, as one does, you carry on those 3 hours, you carry on throughout the day. And that Sunday, when we got back to the hotel, we was like, listen, boys, are we going to open another bottle of brandy? And it just kept on going. I think after the 23 World Cup final, I think I slept a total of 2 hours before I got onto the plane the Monday midday. And it was just a continuous celebration. It was like every time someone either went to bed to take a shower or used the loo and they came back and just celebrated again. And it was pretty special. And yeah, that's such a blast. And from there, you get straight into Joburg. There's thousands of people awaiting you at the airport. And then from there, you get onto the bus. And then the bus tour starts. And that's also just such a party. It's consistent for 7 days. So yeah, by the time you're done there, you're pretty hungover, and that hangover doesn't last a day. It lasts a couple of weeks.
And that's because you're on this extraordinary high. And I've had the opportunity to be at the 2019, the 2030, 2023 World Cup finals. I haven't been there, and I would have loved to, but I also loved being in South Africa when you won and seeing the impact. And its impact, I don't think you guys would have felt as you won, but when you did come back, when you got on those buses, when you travelled around South Africa and you saw how 80 minutes of rugby lifted an entire country, brought people together and showed South Africa at its very, very best. That must be as good a feeling as any.
That is. You see people from all walks of life. You see kids still in their school uniform, running kilometers behind the bus just to catch a glimpse of the Springboks or catch a glimpse of the Euro. So, which was quite special, because it's just the streets were just lined with people and everyone knew where the buses were going. So the people just camped out, waited, and it was not even 30 seconds where they had the opportunity to see the bus coming, wave at the guys, and then it was gone. And it was just incredible to see the amount of people that came out, how much it meant. Tears were flowing. Kids were overly excited. And as you experience this entire thing, you just realize how big of an impact rugby does have on South Africa. And also in saying that, is like how little you actually feel in such a country with so many different aspects, different cultures, and they all come together and you that one bit, and you feel actually so tiny, because if I made a mistake, this none of this would have been possible. So you just experience this vastness of what South Africa means and how proud the people are. And then you play a part in it, but it's the country's way bigger than the game ever.
It leads to all sorts of very cool opportunities. Coming to hang out at Fothergill Island on Lake Kariba is one of them. What has been, other than this, the coolest bonus of being a two-time World Cup winner? What's the most awesome thing that's been thrown your way because of your ability to terrify opposition front rows?
I must say, like something that's very near and dear to my heart is after the 2019 World Cup, Big Boss Johan Rupert actually handed the guys each a Panerai as a thank you, and that that watch, and I know it's very valuable, but that thing has got such big sentimental value to me. It's
way beyond any cost.
Yeah, way beyond any price tag, and that's just something special, because it's a memento. It's a piece you can wear on your arm, and it just represents that you're part of something really, really special in South Africa.
Oh, it looked really, really well deserved, and exactly the kind of thing Johan would do, because Johan loves South Africa and he loves the Springboks. And I know he's arranged celebrations every time you've come back with the World Cup, which is incredibly special. And those were to celebrate the two World Cup victories, which I think most of us would automatically think, well, those are the games that mean the most. And from an end result perspective, I'm sure that is the case. But there will have been matches over your career, not just Springboks, but Stormers, Province as well, where your particular dark art of burrowing down into a scrum and inflicting enormous pain on some poor tight head who's probably been in therapy ever since will have given you enormous satisfaction. And I know this because, as much as I love you and you're a dear friend, props are very strange people at a fundamental level. And what you like to do for a living is very unusual. So when you go back over the career, I think of how Beast destroying Phil Vickery in the 09 Lions series is always spoken of as one of the great loose head performances. What was the great Stephen Kitsoff loose head performance? Who is the tight head who still weeps and phones his mother at the mere mention of your name?
Too many to speak of. I think probably the biggest impact I had, and after that one test match I played back-to-back, about 33 test matches in a row, was my debut against Tark Furlong. So, I mean, Ireland toured South Africa in 2016, they played a test match in Johannesburg. I can't remember where the second one was, but the third one was in PE, and I only made my debut in that third test match. And I came on with about 30 minutes ago. Tark Furlong was quite an experienced tight head for Ireland back then, and the first scrum engagement, it was just like, it was like a bulldozing effect, and I had a very strong pack of forwards behind me, so I can't take all the credit for it, but that was probably, that one scrum was the one that would stick with me for a long time, because that was the first action I've ever made in a Springbok jersey, and it was such a special moment, because it was on debut, got the penalty at the scrum, and then ended up winning the game and the series, which was special.
Is there a sense of, you know, Jacques Callas or Laura Volvoort hits that perfectly timed cover drive, Ronald Koeman or David Beckham nails that perfect free kick around the wall, that sense of timing and power, does it give you that raw sense of excitement?
No, it does, because it was that first moment ever that you, the first play, like I was on the field for 10 seconds and the first action I've ever made was engagement in a scrum. And as we engaged, the scrum was solid, and then all of a sudden we just went over them. And it just gives you like goosebumps as the crowd roars, as the players come in, high fives and big hugs and chest bumps. And it was like such a special moment, because you're like still like nervous, like you're going to maybe mess up or do something wrong or disappoint your team. But then from there, it was just like almost like the kickstart of the career. And it was such a special feeling, because you'd like, I could just remember like the goosebumps and the energy in the stadium and my excitement almost like boiling over. It was a special moment for me.
Now, I don't know if you were together at this stage, if she was in the stands watching on television, having never met you, but do you think that was what ultimately made your now wife, Amy, fall in love with you?
Luckily, by then, we were already dating for about 5 years, but I think that was just the one
that sealed the deal.
That sealed the deal. Then she said, like, if he asks me to get married, I'll probably say yes. There was still a big probably.
She was by your side through the rugby career. She's now by your side as business unfolds and life after rugby unfolds. And that will be one of the great bonuses of the added time you have now to spend time together exploring and adventuring and taking your life into this exciting new space. And you've really been able to do a fair bit of travel. Not all of it, though, has gone completely smoothly. We have a mutual friend called Jeremy, who looks like a rather trimmed version of Michael McIntyre if he went to gym. And he and his wife, Megan, who are mutual friends, arranged a holiday for you and your wife in Spain. But the hotel they booked in Madrid was perhaps not as expected. Tell me about that trip.
Yeah, I was post the Investec Cup final 1 year and decided to to extend our trip and go visit Madrid and see Spain a bit. So Jeremy ended up getting, I think, a couple of points from Emirates and decided to book a hotel through Emirates, and it was a adults-only hotel.
Okay, not too bad. You want to be kid-free, not too much distraction.
Great start to it. But then it was also, in saying that, a gay-only hotel, which caught both of us a bit off guard. And but it was, I must say, in the experience of the hotel, a lot of people thought myself and Jeremy was in a couple, and Megs and Amy was in a couple. But it,
I think you and Jeremy would make a beautiful couple. I really do.
I think so as well. I just sometimes, and I love Jeremy so much, but on a 4-day holiday, and he takes about 8 naps in between and creates a 12-day holiday, is quite special to see. But yeah, lots of love, and we drink a lot of brandy together. But I just leave it at that.
Picturing the two of you walking hand in hand through a hotel in Madrid, which is a wonderful city. It's one of my favorite cities to visit, and a place I really enjoy spending time. Where else is on the horizon to go and spend time where you've been as a rugby player, not really seen much of it, but you would love to get back to?
Probably nothing in the near future, but our next trip booked for myself and the missus is like a little retirement trip to Greece. So it's just going to Mykonos, to Paros, and actually just try and spend a bit of time as a couple, because always, like, when trips are booked, there's a lot of mates involved, and yes, we're going to have some mates coming on this one as well, but just to go enjoy it and not worry about, as we said, like, that Monday morning way, and it's just to go have some fun, be together for 10, 12 days and not really expect anything of myself when it comes to running a half marathon or hitting Ironman goals, but it's all just about enjoyment and actually just relaxing and talking about maybe our lack of the rugby career was.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because there are a lot of rugby guys who have this awful post-rugby midlife crisis and decide that doing things like the Cape Epic or the Comrades are really good ideas. John Smith, Marius Herter, you know, who we're talking about. Is there any inkling to get into one of these crazy spaces that involve vast amounts of training and long distances and probably a hiatus from beer?
Personally, no. I think for me to try and achieve a long-distance run or get into a epic cycle would be bad news. But for me, it's just probably just to maintain some sort of healthy body. I think it would be quite easy if I just let go and I pick up 50 kilos and next time you see me, I wear 5XL, which would be tough. But no, I just wanted to maybe shred a little bit and just try and get in some decent shape. I mean, I've taken a nice break from training last 6-7 months. I mean, it was my entire life for the last 15 years. But I think as I'm sitting here on the podcast with you now, I think I need to make a commitment that I get back in the gym and just train and try and get some sort of shape back.
As you say that, we have not one but two very large beers each. And if you're just listening to this, there genuinely is an entire cow worth of biltong sitting between us. It won't be there for much longer.
We'll try very soon.
the beer part is, of course, really important. It's something we've been able to do a little bit of work with together over the last year or so. And this is you and Malcolm, two front rowers, finding something you love almost more than anything else on earth, and that would be beer, and turning it into a business. But this is certainly not a hobby. This is not just the two of you mucking about and making some pineapple beer style homebrew and giving it to a few mates. This has become a proper business. It's growing really fast, and it's turned into something genuinely exciting.
No, it has. I must say, like, since the launch of Bomb Squad as a brand, it's transcended into a couple of other industries. So we've got the vault with Pick and Pay, and we're doing a golf range with Booyah Golf. So we're trying to expand the range of items available in the Bomb Squad range as much as we can, and recently launched a new product called Highball, which is very exciting. It's come from the travels of Japan and bringing that story back to Africa, what the girls got up to, and while the men was preparing for a World Cup final, the girls all enjoyed a whiskey eyeball, which was great. But it's turning into a nice business, and we're very proud of it. We see more and more people speak about it, more and more people noticing it on social media and marketing wise. So yeah, hopefully it just goes from strength to strength. Quite exciting news that I could probably share with you right now is that we officially just launched in Australia and New Zealand,
which congratulations.
Which is exciting, and yeah, and hopefully it takes off that side. And we know there's a lot of staunch African supporters living that side, and hopefully they pick up the beer and enjoy it and have a good old time.
What has the business element been like? And I ask because when we got back from our game drive this morning, I opened a beer and slipped into the swimming pool to the admiration of everybody watching, and you went off to your laptop to send out 24 emails and authorise a whole pile of payments. Stephen the businessman versus Stephen the rugby player. Slightly different space.
It's a major different space for me. I think probably one of the most difficult tasks I had to try and sort out is just scheduling. And it's from playing rugby and being handed a piece of paper with the week's schedule and you know exactly what time you have to be where, to someone who's has to phone or message or email to ask for appointments to make sure that I hit certain deadlines. So the fact of just scheduling and filling out my calendar has become such a big part of my daily routine, because it's something that was spoon-fed to me while I was playing rugby, but now as a businessman, it's something that I need to figure out myself. And I'm not fortunate enough yet to have assistants and secretary. Everything is self, and I do everything myself. But it's that aspect, is saying yes to certain things or saying no to certain things, but also just trying to get my task that I need to do for the week done. And that has been the biggest challenge, I feel, going from rugby to business. Mentality is the same, but just sorting that out has become the big part of my life.
And it's not always the most fun, but I do get the sense that you're genuinely excited about this new space, and that life after rugby, which for many of your peers, and not just in rugby, sport as a whole, a professional team level, that transition has been a very, very difficult one. Not everybody has made it work at all, let alone as well as you appear to be. I think from the outside, I can safely say that the step away from rugby, as sad as it was to say goodbye to the game, is one you seem to be making pretty comfortably.
Yeah, it's I wouldn't say it's a walk in the park, but it's something I'm striving to make successful. It's put a lot of time and effort into this company, and I would love to see it succeed and just carry on for the foreseeable future. So I'm still learning a lot. I'm still finding my feet when it comes to the corporate space, but I'm finding it very enjoyable. I'm enjoying meeting people, setting up meetings and taking meetings and trying just to sell the product. So for me, it's something new, but it's super exciting. And I think it's still have a long way to go before we can truly call it a successful business.
Well, so far, so good. We have Bomb Squad Lager and Bomb Squad Pilsner at the moment. We've got a fishing expedition this afternoon and some highballs to sample then. And I think at this rate, we're going to have to start making this an annual occurrence. Come up to Fothergill for very important board meetings, drink beer, eat biltong, catch fish, and enjoy one of the most beautiful places on earth.
Sounds like the best plan.
Gitsy, best of luck with all of this. And as happy as I am to see the beer going well and see you and Amy enjoying time together and you finding your feet, I think what makes me happiest is how comfortable you are in the space you are post-rugby and how well you're now set up for life after a game that gave so much to you, but which through the game you gave so much to us as well, and for which, as the many South African rugby fans there are, we are most, most grateful.
Thank you so much, Dan. And it's such a treat to speak to you and spend time with you and enjoy a beer with you. Cheers.
Right. Maybe you'll be our first three-time guest. Well, let's see. Tomorrow afternoon. There we go. A very special guest. First time we've had a guest back on the show. A second time we weren't going to, but he's bigger than me. That wraps up a show coming to you from Fothergill Island in Zimbabwe in partnership with Bomb Squad Beer. Stephen Kitsoff, two-time Rugby World Cup winner, beer magnate, and the man who this afternoon comes second in his fishing competition with me.
You're listening to The Dan Nicholls Show.